Okay, great. Well, you can keep firing off some questions, but I'm going to kick off. Kev, how do we explain when someone asks us, why is there suffering? Why does God permit it?
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's making sure we're clear on that distinction between the macro and the micro level. And you may not go in with this if the person's asking that question from a place of deep pain and shock. The first thing to do is to sit with them and to weep with them as Jesus wept with those who weep. But if they're ready for a bigger explanation, then we always have to point the finger of blame at us. The Bible always points the blame at humanity for sin being in the world. That takes you right back to Genesis 3. Sin leads to curse and death. So the world is not the way it should be because we are not the way that we should be. Part of the curse actually is that the fall fans out in, to us, seemingly random ways. So it seems like people who deserve things less or more suffer less or more for random reasons. And that's where we're into the realm of the unknowns that we were talking about today. But the big level thing, that's why I said Jesus would say, as he says in Luke 13, see, every tragedy is a reason for us all to examine our hearts and repent. Because we're all part of the brokenness and we'll all one day meet God.
Thanks, Kev. There's a question here about other wisdom books, so Proverbs, Psalm 1. I think this is getting at the perhaps parts of the Bible that might sound a bit as if they're saying, if you do the right thing, you won't suffer.
Well, if you don't, you will. Thank you. I think that's one of the big issues that whole wisdom literature piece is dealing with. So Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Job is part of that, and the Psalms. That actually, this exploration of the fact that life isn't as simple as you reap what you sow. And I think the particular thing in Job that it brings to that is a deep exploration of how that feels when you're the person who's trying to live with that as a worshipper, trusting God.
Thanks, Kev. So you highlighted earlier the death of Job's children being just this especially painful aspect of the story. What about them? Did they die in vain, or is there some meaning to it?
I don't know. I mean, one of the nice things about doing a Q&A on a week when we've talked about the unknowns, I'll feel quite free to say I don't know at various points as we think about the question. So we don't know. The meaning, their story is tied up in a bigger story of what God is doing in ultimately restoring Job's situation at the end. But it's terrible. You know, a mother was here last Sunday, a local friend of ours, first, who's lost a child that was 7 years old, absolutely tragic. The first thing she said to me at the end was, what about Job's children? You know, it's one of the worst things, and it's one of those areas where we deeply have to walk with people in their pain to allow them to express their groans, as Job expressed his last week, and to gently nudge people towards hope. Yeah, but you can't come in with neat answers on questions like that.
How do you continue trusting God when he seems silent and absent in the midst of suffering?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because Job expressed that thought, and it's something that sufferers often feel, that God feels silent in the midst of this. It may be a moment where you need to really make sure that you've got Christian brothers and sisters around you, because what you sometimes find is when you feel like God is silent in that way, it's very hard to keep praying sometimes. You may have experienced that, and that's where other people praying for you, or using the Psalms and using some of the great liturgies and letting the saints from other generations pray for you and help you have words where you feel you haven't got them yourself.
A question here about judgment. What's the difference between suffering and judgment? How do we tell the difference between the two?
Yeah, well, one of the ways the Bible describes the whole thing we're experiencing in a broken world, it in itself is part of God's judgment. So Romans 1 says that as part of our rejection of God and wanting to cut loose from him, God, as part of his judgment, gives us over to a punishment that fits the crime. He says, okay, if you want a we don't do God kind of world, I'm going to give you over to try and do that world. And that's a world that leads to all the sin and chaos that we see. So that just experiencing sin and chaos now is in a sense God's judgment. He's given us over to it, but it's not the final judgment. That's a distinct event to come in the future, and that's where Jesus and forgiveness through him is our only hope.
Thanks, Kev. Just final question. I love these questions, by the way. There's so many excellent ones. I love how practical this one is. Is it a sin to rant to God when we suffer?
That's a really good question. I think that's one of the big questions that the book of Job is exploring. And I want to say context is everything. So it's so interesting at the end of Job, where God very clearly at the end in chapter 42 says to the friends, you were wrong about me. You spoke wrongly about me. Unlike my servant Job, who didn't, he spoke rightly about me. Now, you might find that quite surprising when you've read some of Job's groans towards God. I think context and the whole package is everything. So the friends say some theologically accurate things about God in the context of a system where it's more about, well, it's transactional. It's not really even a relationship with God, with the friends. Job groans towards God and says, it feels, God, like, because you're sovereign and good, it feels like you must have rejected me, given what I'm going through. It feels like that. But that's said in the context of someone who's leaning in towards the Lord, seeking to trust him and clinging to, I know that my Redeemer lives. So in that context, I think, yes, we can say Job's model is a model of how to go through that suffering process well.